Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to this edition of A Climate Hawk's Companion, a podcast that gives insight into some of the big questions related to global warming. As you know, last year in June of 2014, the president put forth what's called the Clean Power Plan, which is essentially a set of regulations on existing coal-powered electricity plants that the EPA had created. And those regulations, of course, were much ballyhooed at the time because controlling pollution from existing coal-fired power plants has huge political implications. The EPA set up regulations that were novel in the sense that they kind of break new legal ground in how to interpret the Clean Air Act, of course, which is an important law. And we can be confident as climate hawks that these regulations, the EPA's new regulations, will be challenged in court. And so it's good for us to understand where all that comes from. Dave Roberts over at Grist recently put a very interesting discussion of the legal implications of challenges to the new regulations. And we thought we would take a moment and talk to MCAN's legal expert, Ms. Frances McIntyre, who's joining us. How you doing, Fran?
Yeah, I'm just fine. Thank you. Great, glad to be here.
Good. So you heard a little bit of what I was saying about the Clean Power Plan, and that it's likely to be challenged in court. Can you explain a little bit about what's the legal novelty in the EPA's plan, and why does that make it a problem?
I'll try. Roberts is anticipating how the CPP will be challenged, mm-hmm. and I think he's probably right. He's saying that the way the EPA is planning to implement performance standards for existing sources of pollution, mm-hmm. particularly carbon.
And sources is a term of art, of course. Sources means power plant, right?
It means any building. It has a whole series of terms, building, plant, structure, facility, anywhere that you uh-huh. can think of that could be a source. But they're going to be – go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Okay. Basically, they're going to be the enforcement mechanism that they're using for existing sources of pollution is apparently different from the enforcement mechanism for new sources, which, of course, makes sense because they can be involved in the planning and the design of new sources
right.
of pollution, but we're talking about retrofitting and retrospectively going back to plants that have been in existence for some time. So there's a different framework that they're using, and the question is whether or not that's supported by the language in the Clean Air Act.
Right. And my understanding is that the strategy that the EPA has taken is to basically agnostic about where a particular piece of carbon pollution comes from. Because once the carbon is emitted, it doesn't matter. So they set state-by-state caps for each of the 50 states, a cap on how much emission that state is allowed to emit, of course, but then allow within the state some organization that takes advantage of, say, renewable energy or more efficient use of energy as a way to keep the cap, to meet the cap, right?
I think that the issue here for the existing plants is that it's going to set a performance standard for existing plants. However, the standard for the individual plants is going to take account of all of the other remedial measures in the state, and it's not confined to just measures within the plant. So that
right.
the difference is that that they are not considering only real measures for existing plants within the fence line, but also considering that particular plant in light of all the other measures taken across the state. So it's a statewide enforcement plan is essentially what the EPA is requiring in terms of existing sources.
And Roberts has talked about there's one particular phrase, I think it is in a section called 111D, but it basically this one clause in the law gives the EPA the right to make these regulations, but that clause refers both to, as you said, fixed sources and in contrast, the best systems for controlling pollution. And so one side will look and say, oh, this clause only applies to a fixed power plant or source of pollution inside of a fence. That's all you can talk about. Whereas if you interpret this clause as saying the best systemic way to approach the issue, then you included everything in the electricity sector right down to, you know, whether or not people turn the lights off at night, right?
Yeah, so let me try to explain to you the way I understand it.
Okay.
You see, you know, back decades ago, Congress became concerned about the deleterious aspects of air pollution on the public health. So, as we all know, they established and wrote the Clean Air Act. Now, obviously, Congress couldn't be involved in the specific day-to-day and evolving technologies that would happen over the years, and so they delegated considerable responsibility for achieving this goal to the Environmental Protection Agency. What this is about, then, is an area called administrative law, and it is a question of whether or not a Congress has delegated certain authority to the EPA. What it means in practice...
You say that Congress has delegated to the EPA what amounts to congressional authority, but authority to carry out the Clean Air Act, because
that's
Congress
exactly,
isn't paying attention.
That's right. Essentially, that Congress would delegate it as a broad grant of authority to the EPA to carry out the goals. So
right.
Congress sets the goals, and the agency here, the EPA, is expected to execute it, to design a system and to enforce the system and to put the whole thing into place. And so the language of the Clean Air Act, which has, of course, evolved and been amended over the years, but essentially it states it very broadly and very generally, and it's up to the EPA and the administrator to actually apply it on the ground to the facts as they exist. Now, the way that you referenced a particular clause, and you're talking about 111D, that I anticipate you probably will hear a lot about if the particular CPP provision is challenged, and I think you're right to anticipate that it will. It basically sets forth a requirement to the administrator, the EPA administrator. It tells the EPA administrator what the administrator is to do as to existing sources of pollutants, and then it includes a series of definitions. One of the definitions has to do with what standard of performance means, and that's really where there is a disparity. In the definition of standards of performance, it makes reference to the best system.
So the standards of performance are basically how much, in this instance, how much carbon pollution a plant can emit. Right? That's the performance, and there's a standard there that would limit it.
I think it's actually a standard for reduction. So it's a performance for reduction. The standard for reduction. But the standard of performance is a definition, And the terminology of best comes in within that definition. But the essential order, the direction to the administrator is this. I think it's just useful to understand what the administrator is told to do by the statute. The administrator is to require the state to submit back to the administrator a plan. So the state has to come up with a plan that first establishes standards of performance for any existing source, for any air pollutant, including carbon, of course, and then also for the state to provide for the implementation and enforcement of such standards of performance. So the administrator is obligated to require the states to come up with their own plan.
This is beyond just even the specific carbon pollution. This is
general. That's right. And it's just being applied in this case to specifically carbon reduction, the CPP.
Uh-huh.
But this, as I understand it, 111D has been in place for some time, but this is frankly where the EPA draws its authority to regulate existing sources. And so that's what the administrator is required to do by Congress, is to direct the state to come back with a plan that sets the standard of performance for the existing source and also creates a plan for implementation and enforcement on a state basis. Okay, so then it uses the terminology standard of performance a few times because that's what it's telling the administrator to require the state to do. Now, keep in mind that when Congress delegates authority to an agency, they're not going to just say, go to it, run with it, do whatever you want. They're going to closely regulate and put together a framework that tells the EPA in some detail what they're to do, and so they include definitions. So the definition is where the standard of performance is defined, and that goes this way. Standard of performance means a standard for emissions for air pollutants, which reflects the degree of emission limitation available. Okay, so the degree of emission limitation available, that which you know could be achieved, through the application of the best system of emission reduction, which the administrator determines has been adequately demonstrated. What is standard? Let me say it a little bit, see if I can say it more simply. Standard of performance means a standard for emission reduction, which reflects the degree which is available through the application of the best system of reduction, which has been proven to the administrator. That's an important point, which has been proven to the administrator.
This is something that is basically demonstrable, workable, common sense, and it is a systemic or a system, but in typically in the past, the idea of a system has been some sort of a scrubber in your chimney, right? So it's a system that you fit into the power plant, inside the power plant, and you get that's the best demonstrable technology, right?
Well, I think you have keenly moved right in on the important issue here, and I think it is the use of the term system, which I do not expect, I don't know for sure, but I don't believe it's a term of art within this area of environmental technology. System is a generic word, and you have seized right on that word, and I think that is the key one. This is really an issue of statutory interpretation. And statutory interpretation, for all the fine language around it, means only analyzing what the plain English says.
Right.
Looking at the words used, the meaning of the words used, occasionally things hinge on punctuation. But here, I think the words clearly express the intent of Congress, and Congress chose the word system. Congress didn't choose the word method.
Right,
Congress
right,
didn't
right.
choose the word technology.
Yeah,
they said system.
Mm-hmm.
And so some of this is going to come back to, I know you've got right at hand your Oxford English Dictionary, and you can look up exactly what a system means, but I don't have mine with me where I am right now in a nice warm place.
Right.
But it's a group of interacting, interrelated,
right.
or interdependent elements forming this complex whole.
Uh-huh.
Now, in fairness, the ninth meaning given by the dictionary I have here says method or procedure, but that's the ninth meaning. That's not the first meaning.
Right. So a broad interpretation of system would certainly include things like renewable energy to outside of a power plant's fenced, or for the utility to go help people improve the energy efficiency of their home, so there's not so much demand on the power plant in the first place. And
I think that's right. I mean, if you listen to the words that are chosen by Congress, reflects the degree of emission limitation available through the application of the best system of emission reduction, which the administrator determines has been adequately demonstrated. So it clearly implies that in the future there'll be improvement and there'll be change and there'll be evolution, and they ask the administrator to make that determination as to what's been proven as to working the best on a system basis, not within the smokestack. I would argue. So if you look at that standard of performance definition, which includes the word system, then
right.
you bring it back to the essential order. To the administrator to require the states to come up with a procedure that sets a standard of performance using the best system available, so I think that the language chosen permits the EPA to interpret this as a statewide, system-wide effort to comply with the carbon cap within that state. And it's practical. It makes sense. It wouldn't make sense. Opponents would the argument of the opponents would have to be that the state is obligated to go back to the individual plant and have that plant come up with the best procedure available. Oh, in fact, taking into account costs. But it's unusual for, I think, an industry to be required to meet a best standard. Reasonable mm-hmm. standard, yes. Average standard, yes. But the best standard, it just isn't typical in mm-hmm. statutory language to set the bar that high.
I got one other question for Annie. Yeah. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
What I was going to say, the opponents, in order to narrow this, essentially put the power plants, I think, under a greater burden to comply with the best procedure, which would obviously mm-hmm. be the most expensive procedure, which we know in carbon capture, you've explained right. to me, is right. really tremendously expensive. So that really wouldn't make sense if that's – it would make sense, but it would be impractical.
Right.
So the question right. really is going to come down to ultimately in any lawsuit, Ted, whether or not the EPA's interpretation of this language, best system proven to the administrator, whether or not it's consistent with the meaning of the statute and whether or not it's a reasonable one.
Wow. Well, I think that we should leave it there, friend.
I think you have helped.
I think it's the idea that the administrator is empowered to make the best system and that that's a reasonably broad interpretation should be heartening to people to know that the EPA is not too far off in the wilderness in its proposal here, and that we can certainly hope that there's a good chance that when this finally gets to the Supreme Court, which will probably sooner rather than later, the guys in the Supreme Court will listen to wisdom like you've given us tonight.
Well, let me just say it to you, just leave it with you this way, that this is administrative law, and within the administrative agency law, courts will give substantial deference to the agency that has expertise and experience in enforcing their own statutory framework. So that I think, as you've already seen in several other cases, that the EPA's interpretation will be the one that will win out in the end.
Super. Well, if anyone's interested in reading the Dave Roberts article, we'll post it in the blog that will be associated with this podcast. So that's where you can find the links. You can listen to us on Facebook. No, you can get to us on Facebook. We have a Facebook site. You can listen to us there. You can listen to us at iTunes, and you can listen to us on Stitcher using your smartphone. So we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and because we believe it is our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. Thank you very much for being with us, Francis.
It's been great to be here, Ted.
And thanks for everyone for listening. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Climate Hawks Companion.